showing how God moved from our problem of sin to his solution of his son on the cross. We've talked about how there's a lot of things that certainly have happened with respect to the Lord and his activities on this earth and the things of his people, but they're simply not recorded in this book we know as the Bible. It's not recorded there. And the Apostle John told us that there were many things Jesus himself did and said, but they simply weren't recorded. But the things that are recorded are there for our learning, for our understanding, and that God has given us everything we need that pertains to life and godliness. And so we know that the things that are written are there for a very specific reason, and it is to strengthen our relationship with God and show us how to be like him and to follow him. So, the scheme of redemption is the plan of God that was set in place and designed prior to the first "let there be" was ever even spoken. And, as soon as Genesis 3:6 hit, we saw that sin entered the world. The world prior to Genesis 3:6 was a perfect place. There was not a thing in the world wrong with it. Everything was perfect. There was peace and harmony with God. There was harmony with mankind and God. The earth itself was a very different place. But after Genesis 3:6, we see that sin entered the world, and everything was different from there on. The marriage relationship changed. The childbirth changed. The earth itself changed. It started becoming a very rather hostile place to live. The way mankind lived, man had to now earn his living and handle his very survival by the sweat of his brow. And so we see that everything changed. And you and I see the very effects of the sin on this world to this day. We've talked about how sin has affected the world in three major ways. First, there's just the direct effect. The same concept I teach my kids. Hey, you go do something stupid, expect bad things to happen. It's just as simple as that. So there's the direct consequence that we have due to our own sinful behavior. There's the indirect effect, and that is the effect that sin has upon you just by circumstance because of the sin of someone else. I've often used the example of you walk into a convenience store to get a Coke or pay for a tank of gas, and somebody comes in with a gun. Okay, they're the one robbing the store. It's their sin, but it's having an indirect effect on you. And so we all, in some ways or another, have been indirectly affected by the sin of others many times over in our life. And then thirdly, there's just the effect that sin has had on the world in general. We look at all the wars, all the countries in this world that are just falling to bits and people are barely surviving. At the root of it all is sin. That's the root of it all. And so we talked about that, but this book is all about God moving from Genesis 3:6 to the cross. And then from the cross onward in these last days, a discussion of what it means to follow Christ, what it means to take up our cross and follow him, what it means to be in the church, and that church we know is the kingdom. And so that's the idea that we're trying to get out of this whole class, just a high-level overview of this whole story and how it all connects together, how it all points to the cross. And so we've gone through several different books so far, working our way through what we know as the Pentateuch, the first five books of the Bible, and we're now tonight in Deuteronomy. And we've been breaking it up in this form here. And right now we're in the 40-year wandering. Well, the book of Deuteronomy is there at the very last end of the 40-year wandering. And so we're going to hopefully get through that tonight. That's my goal. And this will come to an end. This is kind of, I feel like we need to have like a little party or something. We're reaching the end of another major point in the scriptures. There was the whole period of God going from Adam all the way up through Abraham, and even then we went from Abraham to Joseph. We saw that whole section, and then it picks up at Moses, and now Deuteronomy is going to end with the death of Moses. And so we're coming to again to the end of another section, a major section of the story of redemption. And next week we'll we'll start picking up on another one, the conquest of the land of Canaan. And so that's where we are. So last week we finished covering the book of Numbers, and we discussed the bronze serpent. And we talked about how the comparison of that to Jesus. You remember the story? The God sent serpents in amongst the people, and they started biting. You know, this is all due to their unbelief and their disobedience to God. And so the solution to fix that problem was God told Moses, hey, go make a serpent, put it up on a standard, and it's whenever anybody will look at it, they'll be healed from the snake bite. And so Moses did so, and then we looked at how Jesus compared himself to that. He said, you know, just as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness, so will the Son of Man be lifted up. And we talked about that and how in a very real way that there's a foreshadowing there. And, you know, something we've seen, something we've talked about all through this study so far is how a lot of this stuff going on way back here in the Old Testament, it all points to the cross. And indeed, this idea of this serpent up on a pole is very pointing to the cross. And the reason being is because it required faith and it required obedience. You know, if the people had never gone and looked upon that serpent there that Moses had set up, they would have died from their ailment, their snake bite. But, you know, by doing what God said and looking upon that and putting their faith in that as the solution to fix that problem, many were healed. Likewise, it is with Christ. Christ was suspended there on the cross between heaven and earth for the sin of all mankind. And when we come to Him in obedience of faith and give our lives to Him, our problem of sin will be healed. And so there's a very strong connection there. And we talked about Balaam and his talking donkey. That was a fun little discussion. But so we talked about that. We also talked about how the census was taken. And the thing I wanted to point out about that is that Moses took this census, and the scriptures tell us there, and we looked at this last week, that all of those who were on the census that was taken back at Sinai were now dead. And so all those who are on the census now are all those who are 20 years and older when the wandering started. If you remember when the wandering started, God said, all of you who are 20 years and older, you're going to fall dead here in the wilderness. You will not enter into the land. And so we see that was the case. The census was taken, and indeed, just as the Lord spoke, it happened. And so a census is taken that came out to 600 and something thousand people that were there ready to go into the wilderness. We also see that that Joshua was given authority as a leader. Moses was still very much in charge, but the Lord instructed Moses to kind of take Joshua in and really start letting him have some authority and do some leading. And so we see that going on. All right, so the book of Deuteronomy, just as a high-level overview, the name of the book means second law, and it covers 2 months. It covers 1 month of Moses preaching, followed by 1 month of the people mourning the death of Moses. Moses addresses here the second generation of Israel from Egypt. You got to remember, back in at the beginning of this 40-year wandering, you know, these people now were young folks. Okay, they were 20 and under. And so they, you know, while they may have been a part of the exiting of Egypt and a part of all the activities that went on there at Sinai and all, they're very young. And so, you know, they may not have fully known everything that God had told, all the commands, all this kind of stuff. And so Moses is preparing these people. You know, they're now the adults. They're now the ones who are the heads of the tribes and the heads of the families. And so Moses is preparing them to go into the land and finally take over the land that God had planned from the get-go. You know, this is something that was supposed to happen 40 years prior. But due to their unbelief, God said, all right, not going to happen. And so Moses is preparing these people, saying, and all throughout his sermon and his speech on this, it's a remember, 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 remember. And we'll see that as we go through our study. All right, so we see that Deuteronomy 1 verse 3 tells us that in the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month, Moses spoke to the children of Israel according to all that the Lord had commanded him to give to them. And so we see when this starts. It's in the 40th year. On the first day of the 11th month. And so, here again, the 40-year wandering is coming to a close. It's coming to a head. And they're about to finally head over into the promised land to begin the conquest. Chapters 1 through 3 of Deuteronomy is Moses recounting everything that has occurred over the past 40 years, beginning from the time that the spies went into the land. That's where he starts. And he's reminding these people, all right, look, let's talk about the past 40 years here, all right? Let's look at what all has happened. What started off this whole 40-year wandering mess was unbelief and disobedience. We should have been in the land already, but the spies went over, 10 came back and said, we can't do this. The people are too big, the city's too fortified, yada, yada, yada. This is impossible for us to do. And, of course, God said, you know what? I'm sick and tired of this unbelief. I'm sick and tired of me having to prove myself over and over to you guys again, just for you to continue to spurn me and show and demonstrate your unbelief. And so God said, you know what? For every day, that you went to spy out the land, 40 days, you will wander in the wilderness. So that's where the whole 40-year wandering came up from. So Moses began right there, and he went all through the 40 years, reminding them of all the things that have happened even during that 40-year time span, to include Moses himself being banned from entering the promised land. And if you read through Deuteronomy, you can see Moses is really hurt by that. And we'll look at a verse here in a second, but there are many times throughout the pages of Deuteronomy where Moses talks about this incident. And he's heartbroken about it. Brother Paul? Yeah. Okay. Very good. All right, so Deuteronomy chapter 3, verses 23 through 28. This is where we see Moses really talking about the first time that he spoke to God. You know, so if you remember back, was it a couple weeks ago, I believe it was, we discussed, was it Numbers 21? I believe it was. That's where Miriam died, and it was also there that we see that Moses struck the rock rather than speaking to it there at Meribah. The people complained and griped because they didn't have any water. And so God said, all right, I'm going to give them water. And he tells Moses and Aaron, go out to the rock, speak to it, and water will come forth. Well, Moses was quite angry about, Moses is in one of his moments where he's sick and tired of dealing with the people. And so instead of speaking to the rock, he takes the staff and goes out there and just whacks the thing. Water comes out. And God says, I told you to speak to it. And because of that, Moses was barred from going into the promised land. So when we see this, we can see that Moses is having a very difficult time with that. And I can understand so. You know, Moses has put a lot of blood, sweat, and tears into this whole thing. How many times you remember a couple weeks ago, we talked about how many times over in throughout the book of Numbers we see, and Moses fell on his face. The people did this, and Moses fell on his face. The people said this, and Moses fell on his face. So many times, Moses came and interceded for the people of Israel, trying to rescue them from the wrath of God, who was just reaching his wits' end with these people. And so, we can certainly understand why Moses would be absolutely heartbroken now that he's come this far and has gone through all of this and is being forbidden to be allowed to enter the land. So in verses 23 through 28, Moses says, I also pleaded with the Lord at that time, saying, O Lord God, you have begun to show your servant your greatness and your strong hand. For what God is there in heaven or on earth who can do such works and mighty acts as yours? Let me, I pray, cross over and see the fair land that is beyond the Jordan, that good hill country in Lebanon. But the Lord was angry with me on your account and would not listen to me. And the Lord said to me, enough! Speak to me no more of this matter. Go up to the top of Pisgah and lift up your eyes to the west and north and south and east and see it with your eyes, for you shall not cross over this Jordan. But charge Joshua and encourage him and strengthen him, for he shall go across at the head of this people, and he will give them as an inheritance the land which you will see." And so we see that it just didn't stop there with God telling Moses, "Well, you struck this rock, now you're not going over." We see here that Moses was begging God, please let me work with me here. Yeah, I know I was wrong. I really want to go into the land. And God finally just had to drop the hammer and say, enough, don't mention it to me again. And so we see, you know, God getting pretty firm with this great man of God here. But to me, what this underscores is the very fact and the very real truth that even this great man of God, Moses, you know, as we'll see later on at the end of my presentation here, the Bible says that Moses was an amazing man, and there was not a prophet that came after him that was likened unto him. He was an incredible man. And I would dare say, next to Jesus Christ, he was one of the greatest figures written about in the scriptures. An incredible man of God. Yet even Moses needed God to get to the cross. Everything that Moses did, all the faithfulness that he showed, all the times that he came and intervened for the people, all those times where he had that face-to-face meeting with the Lord in that tent of meeting, saw him face-to-face, spoke with him as a friend speaks with a friend. This great man of God, he himself needed God to get to the cross. And that's what I take away from this. You know, it did not matter all that Moses had done. One instance was enough to keep him out of the promised land of Canaan. How much more so is it to keep one out of the promised land of heaven? And so we can see here that how critical it was for God to get to the cross. And so that's the lesson, the point that I take away from such a message in this. All right, Deuteronomy chapter 4 through 5. In these passages, these chapters, Moses begins reminding Israel of God delivering them from Egypt. So he spends chapters 1 through 3 talking about the past 40 years. You know, that's something that would be fresh on these people's minds. All right, these people had just spent the past 40 years wandering around in the wilderness and wasting this time that due to their unbelief, and they're now about to cross over. So, you know, he started there because, hey, this is fresh on the mind. So while this is fresh on your mind, let me just go ahead and talk to you about this first. But now I want to take you back to Egypt. And so he then spends 4 through 5 talking about, remember how the Lord brought you out of Egypt, and we went to Sinai, we crossed the Red Sea, and this and that and the other. And so he spends those passages, you know, giving the reminder speech about what went on there. Then in chapter 5, he repeats the Ten Commandments to these people. Again, most of them probably knew it. Okay, I'm certain this was something that was spoken of quite regularly among the people of Israel. But Moses reiterates it again to these people. Look, you're about to go into this land. Remember the commandments and keep them. He then spends chapters 6 through 11. He's admonishing Israel with charges of obedience and faithfulness to God as they go forward into the land. So he talks about the past 40 years, reminds them of that. He reminds them of Egypt and the Ten Commandments. And then he begins, you know, admonishing them, look, as you go into the land, don't mess it up. You finally come this far. All right, we're here at the Jordan yet again. Let's don't have a situation like we did 40 years ago. So when you go into the land, do this. Serve God. Don't follow the false gods. And he goes on and on and on through this whole spiel of look, do not turn your backs on God when you get into the land. And so he's really giving them an admonishing speech here of obedience and faithfulness as they go forward into the land. All right, a good reminder for parents. I love Deuteronomy chapter 6, and you all have probably heard many a sermons on it. Mike, I'm sure you've probably preached many a sermons out of Deuteronomy 6. It's a good passage, and it's one that we need to keep at the forefront of our minds, especially as parents and as grandparents. It's something that we need to think about. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. These words which I am commanding you today shall be on your heart. You shall teach them diligently to your sons, and shall talk of them when you sit in the house, and when you walk by the way, when you lie down, and when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and they shall be as frontals on your forehead. You shall write them on the doorpost of your house and on your gates. What is Moses saying here? He's saying you need to saturate your homes with God's word. When you rise up, when you're traveling, when you're just sitting around the house, when you go to bed at night, talk to your children frequently, all the time. Hang stuff up on your walls at home. We got it in our house. You know, I believe we had the, it was me and my house, we will serve the Lord, right? And that the one we have hanging there in our living room? Or, you know, we had the vinyl sticker on the wall there. You know, we need to do this, folks. It's a good thing. Our homes need to be saturated with God's word and reminders of Him, something that we are constantly seeing and constantly being talked about. Prayer needs to be a very active part of our families and our homes. And these are things we need to saturate our children's lives with. It's critical. And we're failing our children, we're failing our grandchildren if we're not doing that. It is absolutely imperative that we drill the love of God and that desire, that zeal for Him, that love for Him, that desire to serve Him into the minds and hearts of our children and our grandchildren is critical. And we cannot let them down. Folks, you all see the world we live in. Things continue to spiral downwards. And I know they have been for hundreds of years now. You know, to the Lord, it's really nothing new. But someday we're going to turn these kids out on the world. And they've got to be prepared, folks. So it's our job to equip them and train them and instill that love for God in them. You know, it's not uncommon for people to wear T-shirts. Something about God or some kind of scripture on them. You know, it's just some kind of visual reminder. You know, a lot of people wear bracelets. You know, the WWJD bracelets. What would Jesus do? Just some kind of reminders to where we daily see. You know, and that daily, everywhere I go, I'm somehow reminded about God. Deuteronomy chapter 6, 20 through 25. When your son asks you in time to come, saying, what do the testimonies and statutes and the judgments mean which the Lord our God commanded you? Then you shall say to your son, we were slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt, and the Lord brought us out from Egypt with a mighty hand. Moreover, the Lord showed great and distressing signs and wonders before our eyes against Egypt, Pharaoh, and all his household. He brought us out from there in order to bring us in, to give us the land which he had sworn to our fathers. So the Lord commanded us to observe all these statutes, to fear the Lord our God, for our good always, and for our survival as it is today. It will be righteousness for us if we are careful to observe all this commandment before the Lord our God, just as He commanded it. So again, constantly drilling it in. When our kids come to ask, folks, let's be the ones to have an answer. We don't want people at school giving that answer. We need to be the ones giving that answer. We have to be ready. Be ready to tell your children, you know what, here's what the Lord's done for me. Y'all remember that time back then when Dad lost his job? You remember that time when so-and-so was sick? You remember this? You remember that? You know, you didn't know what was going on now, my teenage son. You didn't know what was going on back then when you were a little kid. But let me tell you. And let me tell you how the Lord delivered. All right, we got to talk about these things. It's good for the children to hear this stuff. And so, you know, just like Moses is admonishing the people here, that admonishment applies to us equally. Grandparents and all as well. It's crucial to our children's spiritual well-being. All right, intermarrying with the Canaanites forbidden. Deuteronomy 1 through 6. When the Lord your God brings you into the land where you are entering to possess it and clears away many nations before you, and when the Lord your God delivers them before you and you defeat them, you shall utterly destroy them. You shall make no covenants with them and show no favor to them. Furthermore, you shall not intermarry with them. You shall not give your daughters to their sons, nor shall you take their daughters for your sons, for they will turn away your sons from following me to serve other gods. And the anger of the Lord will be kindled against you, and he will quickly destroy you. But thus you shall do to them. You shall tear down their altars and smash their sacred pillars and hew down their Asherim, burn their graven images with fire, for you are a holy people to the Lord your God. The Lord your God has chosen you to be a people for his own possession out of all the peoples who are on the face of the earth. So there again, we see God saying, look, don't get over there and start making friends with these people. They need to be eradicated. And you know, I know that sounds harsh, right? That sounds so just against everything. What? But we have to go back to what God told Abraham. Hundreds of years prior to this, God told Abraham, I'm going to give all that land here that you're walking around in, that you're wandering around in, I'm going to give this land to your descendants. But it's going to be hundreds of years from now, for the sin of these people is not yet complete with me. My loving kindness, my desire to work with them and allow them to repent is still very much alive and well. And so, but that has now run out. That time has run out. And he even gave them 40 more years, but that time has run out. And so God is saying, look, you're to go in there and don't go in there and start making friends. Do not be handing your daughters over to their sons and your sons over to their daughters. Don't do that. They will pull you away. And given the history of Israel up until this point, that's a very real truth. Deuteronomy 7:7-8, the Lord did not set up, and this is a reminder for us, for the people to be humble, and it's equally applicable to us as well. Deuteronomy 7:7-8, the Lord did not set his love on you, nor choose you, because you were more in number than any of the other peoples. For you were the fewest of all peoples. But because the Lord loved you and kept the oath which he swore by your swore to your forefathers, the Lord brought you out of the out by a mighty hand and redeemed you from the house of slavery from the hand of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. Also in same concept here, just a couple chapters over, Deuteronomy 9:4-5. Do not say in your heart when the Lord your God has driven them out before you, because of my righteousness the Lord has brought me in to possess this land. But it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord is disposing them before you. It is not for your righteousness or for the uprightness of your heart that you are going to possess their land, but it is because of the wickedness of these nations that the Lord your God is driving them out before you in order to confirm the oath which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. So again, God is saying, look, don't you go in there thinking, I'm one of God's people, yeah, because I'm so righteous and I'm keeping the law, that's why this is happening. Moses is saying, don't you do that. There was nothing special about you guys. The Lord simply chose y'all. And it's as simple as that. You know, we talked about that several months ago when God just comes to Abraham and says, Abraham, you know what? This is what I'm going to do. And you're going to be the one to start it all off. There was nothing special about Abraham. You know, there was nothing that Abraham could shake his fist at the Lord and say, God, you owe me this now. You remember when I did that? God just simply chose Abraham and went with it. That was that. That was his choice. That's his right. You know, shall the pottery say to the potter, why'd you make me this way? You know, God is in control. It's his creation. He has that right. He has that authority. And so he simply did it. And so Moses is reminding these people of this very real truth. And it's a truth that we would do well to mind as well. Folks, there is nothing I have done. It does not matter how good I live. It does not matter all the great works I do. I could be better than Moses, but I'm still very much in need of Jesus. It does not matter what I do. There's not a thing on this earth or outside of this earth that I can do to shake the fist of pride in God's face and say, you owe me because of everything I've done. Mm-mm. It's not the way it works. Folks, I serve God not because I'm trying to earn salvation. I serve God because I love God and because I'm so grateful for all he's done with me. Without the cross, folks, I am dead in my sins. Without the cross, Moses, dead in his sins. We talked about that as well. Without the cross, nothing else matters. And so Moses is reminding them of this very real truth. And notice, too, he goes back and talks about the wickedness of the people. That's exactly what God told Abraham. We just talked about that. You know, God told Abraham, their sin is not yet complete with me. I'm still working with them, still giving them time. Well, their wickedness has pushed the Lord to the edge, and that's that. And so it's because of their wickedness that God is doing that. So this is kind of like a double-edged sword. Number one, he's fulfilling promises to Abraham. But number two, he's also judging the people of Canaan. This is a judgment. And if you read through the whole Old Testament, you see that God does that. He judges Israel many a times. Syrian captivity, Babylonian captivity, all these other captivities, the whole book of Judges is God's judgment upon Israel because of their leaving him, their being unfaithful to him. And so that's the way God works. And so this is a two-edged sword. It is a fulfillment of promise, but it's also a judgment on the people of Canaan. All right. So what's the lesson for us? Well, I think we just kind of talked about that. I'm not clicking my slides fast enough. The lesson for us is to keep this in our own minds. Folks, we cannot ever get so haughty to think, oh, I've got it all together. I worship twice on Sundays. I'm here every Wednesday. Don't cuss, don't drink, don't smoke, don't cheat on my wife, don't do this, don't do that, and I do this, and I do that, and I'm God's man. Folks, we cannot adopt that type of attitude. Because there's nothing I have done that has forced God into a position where he owes me salvation. It's not going to happen. It is only by the sacrifice of his son that I am able to gain salvation with him, and that I'm able to be restored to him, that I'm able to have these sins of mine washed away. That's the only way. And so we would do ourselves, we'd be very wise to keep that in mind and to keep ourselves in check and maintain that humble attitude. And that will change things, folks. If we can bring ourselves to keep that form of a humility in our minds, it will change the way we operate. It will change the way we look at the world. It will change the way we look at sinners. Okay? Because we won't necessarily be looking down on them anymore saying, oh, you filthy sinner, you need to be like me. No, it'll say, I was there. But God pulled me out, and he can pull you out too. Come on. All right, so we've got to keep that humble state of mind. All right, dealing with fear. Deuteronomy 7, 17 through 21. If you should say in your heart, these nations are greater than I, how can I dispossess them? You shall not be afraid of them. You shall well remember what the Lord your God did to Pharaoh and to all of Egypt, the great trials which your eyes saw, and the signs and the wonders and the mighty hand and the outstretched arm by which the Lord your God brought you out. So shall the Lord your God do to all the peoples of whom you are afraid. Moreover, the Lord your God will send the hornet against them until those who are left and hide themselves from you perish. You shall not dread them, for the Lord your God is in your midst, a great and awesome God. Deuteronomy 9, 1 through 3, Hear, O Israel, you are crossing over the Jordan today to go in to dispossess nations greater and mightier than you, great cities fortified to heaven, a people great and tall, the sons of the Anakim, who you know and of whom you have heard it said, who can stand before the sons of Anak? Know therefore today that it is the Lord your God who is crossing over before you as a consuming fire. He will destroy them and he will subdue them before you so that you may drive them out and destroy them quickly, just as the Lord has spoken to you. And so when we look at this, we see that the people of Israel have a tremendous task ahead of them. A people mightier to them, far well fortified to them, larger in stature than them, very scary. But what Moses is telling the people through God is that you don't have to fear. God's going to do it for you. You're barely going to have to lift a finger. I mean, God's going to send the hornet after them. Okay, that's not anything that Israel's going to do. Israel's not going to go out there and grab hornet's nests and start chunking them at the people. God's going to do that. Okay, so we see God using his own nature, his own creation to just take care of the problem for Israel. This verse here, you know, the God who is crossing over before you as a consuming fire. Again, you know, it gives the idea that Israel's not going to barely have to lift a finger to make this happen. God is going to handle it. So what's the lesson there for us today? Do we ever have to face major, big, scary things in our life? You bet we do. Do we ever have to go up against the proverbial highly walled, fortified cities and what seems a monster of a task and a trial that is far greater and more powerful than I? You bet we do. Absolutely we do, and it comes in many forms. Family struggles, health struggles, financial struggles, job loss, you name it. Folks, there are times in our life where we're going to be brought to our knees and we're going to say, how in the world am I going to ever deal with this? Right there. The Lord will go before you. He will handle it in some way or fashion. It's our job, folks, to simply hang on to Him and look to Him, stay with Him, keep moving forward with Him. And not to fall by the wayside in tears, but to keep moving forward. Chuck?
Just say, the Lord give us more than we can stand.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes He has a pretty big opinion of what He thinks I can stand.
Yeah.
But the point is that we're going to have trials. Look at what Peter wrote. Peter wrote, says, you're going to suffer. And when you're suffering, you know that you're doing it but with righteous things.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
He promised us a home in heaven.
Mm-hmm.
That's the land. And He blazed the way for that.
Mm-hmm.
He gave us a promise.
Mm-hmm.
If you just do this, okay, you'll stay, your heart is towards me. You have faith in me. You're going to get that land.
Yeah.
That's probably my biggest lesson that I take from this one is.
Sure.
That was a promised land, but it was a physical one.
Yeah.
This is a promised land that's eternal.
Yeah. But, you know, there's still a journey to get there. And that's the thing, you know, we'll read as we go into Joshua, you know, the conquest. The people had to go through a lot to get to that final point where they completely took over the land. And, you know, it's the getting there, right? That can be the real trial and the real struggle. So, yeah, you're very right. You know, that. That's correct. It absolutely is. And we see that many a times over in this whole story of Moses and Israel. There's a test of faith all the time, many times. And more often than not, Israel failed that test miserably. Let us not do the same. All right, Deuteronomy 7, verse 22. The Lord your God will clear away these nations before you little by little. You will not be able to put an end to them quickly, for the wild beast would grow too numerous for you. You remember discussing this several weeks ago. God gave His plan of how He was going to do this thing. If I'm not mistaken, it was there at Mount Sinai when God made the second covenant with the people. Remember, God made the first covenant, but when Moses made that first trip up to the mountain, they quickly broke it by making the golden calf. And so after that, God made another covenant with them, and He laid out His plan of how He was going to take over the land of Canaan. And He told them way back then that, look, you're not just going to go in there and take it over. It's going to be a slow thing. We're going to move it in. We're going to move it in slow, and you're going to kind of take over as you go. He says, because if I go in and just take out everybody all in one fell swoop, then the land will just overtake itself. And we talked about that. You know, I gave the idea of, you know, growing up in rural Alabama, It was not uncommon for me to be walking through the woods or something and come across some old house there in the middle of the woods. It was built 100, 200 years ago, and now there's a massive tree or 10 growing through it, vines all over it, and the whole thing's rotted out. That's what the earth does. The earth just reclaims. And so, that's why farmers, we're always out there cutting grass, right? What's going to happen if you don't cut your backyard? It's going to overtake. And so we're always out there with our lawnmowers and our weed trimmers and everything else, keeping it under control, lest the earth take it back over. And so that's what God is saying here. I'm not just going to go in there and wipe them all out. We're going to slowly roll this thing so you can move into houses. You can move into fields that already have crops in them. And you can just slowly kind of take things over like that. And so we see God telling them this yet again. Look, this is the plan, okay? So I just wanted to point that out because I always love it when God says it, this way, and then he says it again so a long time later, or we see it happening. I love seeing those connections. To me, that is a faith builder in this book, to show God said it, it happened. God said it, he said it again, and then we see it happening. I love making those connections. All right, Deuteronomy chapter 12 through 25, Moses reiterates the law to Israel. Now, you remember he had already reiterated the Ten Commandments back in chapter 5. He now spends this whole section going through over all the other laws, the sundry laws, how to handle criminal situations, clean and unclean things, the sabbatical year, the various feasts, Passover, weeks, booths, the Levitical tithing, how they were supposed to handle the priest, the cities of refuge, the sundry laws, domestic relationships. He goes through the whole spiel again, basically kind of does a overview of the book of Leviticus in these chapters here. And then in chapters 26 through 30, Moses gives further instruction of what to do upon entering the land. And that was to just give the people an idea of, look, when you go in, here's some things you need to do immediately up front. All right, here we see redemption enjoined into the story once again. Deuteronomy 18, 15 through 18, the Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me. This is Moses speaking now. A prophet like me from among you, from your countrymen, you shall listen to him. This is according to all that you asked of the Lord your God in Horeb on the day of the assembly, saying, let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God. Let me not see the great fire anymore, or I will die. The Lord said to me at that time, they have spoken well. I will raise up a prophet from among their countrymen like you, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him. So this is God once again enjoining the cross into the story of redemption. Obviously here the foreshadow, this is Moses making a prediction. This is God informing Moses of the cross. All right, God is saying, I'm going to raise a prophet just like you from amongst your countrymen. Of course, we see that coming down through Judah, through the line of Judah, the line of David, and the coming of Christ onto this earth. It's a backward look to the promises of Abraham and a forward look to the cross. Again, God is tying it all together. And that's what this book is all about. Again, it's how God moved from our problem of sin to his solution on the cross. And right here in Deuteronomy 18, he's tying it together, giving a prophecy of saying, here's what's to come. And don't forget, Moses drives home the need to remember and not forget. In the New American Standard Version of the Bible, remember is stated 15 times in the book of Deuteronomy, and do not forget or something along the don't forget, do not forget, whatever, is stated 9 times. And so Moses reiterating over and over, don't forget. Don't forget when that happened. Don't forget when God did this. Remember when God did this. Remember when your fathers did this and what happened. Remember, remember, remember. Don't forget. Don't forget. Be sure to do. Moses is going to great lengths here to drill into these people's head and pound it into their head. Don't forget. Remember. And we would do well to do the same with ourselves today. To remember all the things that, we all can probably look back over the course of our life and see mighty things that God has done. Folks, we cannot forget those things. We've got to remember those things and let that propel us forward. To build our faith and say, you know what, God's got this. I'm not going to worry about it. I don't know what's going on. I don't know the answer, but God's got it. And we need to build our faith on that. All right, verses chapter 34, 1 through 8. Now Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land, Gilead as far as Dan, and all Naphtali and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh and all the land of Judah as far as the western sea. And then the Lord said to him, this is the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there. So Moses, a servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he, that's God, buried him in the valley in the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor, but no man knows his burial place to this day. Although Moses was 120 years old when he died, his eye was not dim, nor his vigor abated. So the sons of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. Then the days of weeping and mourning for Moses came to an end. You know, we see this here. Nine through 12. Then Joshua the son of Nun was filled with the spirit of wisdom, for Moses had laid his hands on him, and the sons of Israel listened to him and did as the Lord had commanded Moses. Since that time, no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face, for all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, all his servants, and all his land, and for all the mighty power and for all the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of Israel. You know, I love these passages because of this right here. The Transfiguration. And William and I were talking about this Sunday. You know, it had to be such a tragedy for Moses to not be able to go over into that land. And again, if you read the entirety of the book of Deuteronomy, you'll see Moses mention that several times. Several times he says, you know what? God even got mad with me too and told me I couldn't go to the land. And so, but what I see in this, brethren, is I see Moses having this intimate relationship with the Lord where he spoke with him face to face. All through this whole ordeal from Egypt all the way up to this very moment. And even though he wasn't allowed to go into the land of Canaan, guess who was there with Jesus at the Transfiguration right before Jesus' death? Moses. So even in his death, Moses was still consulting with the Lord on this path to the cross. And I find it amazing that here Jesus is getting, you know, his moment of death is approaching, and he goes up on this mountain, he's transfigured, he moves over into this spiritual realm, and he's having this conference meeting with Moses and Elijah. Once again, the Lord there having this face-to-face meeting with Moses, planning this thing out, talking it out. Folks, Moses was heavily involved in the path of redemption. And even in his death, he still was. And I find that just amazing. I find that so powerful. You know, to me it says, you know what? So what Moses didn't go to the land of Canaan? He got to go be with the Lord and continue the work with him somehow, some way. I don't fully understand it all, but that tells me he did. And folks, I find that so powerful. And so amazing. And, you know, it's just, man, Moses was a great man. You know, and we do well to fashion ourselves after him. You know, take him as an example. Have that boldness, that courage that Moses did. And you know what? You never know what the Lord might do with you, just as he did with Moses. So that brings the life of Moses to an end. That's the end of that whole, another section, as it were. And so next week we'll start picking up on the conquest of Canaan. Almost did it.